This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Good stuff coming up today. We've got you covered on everything. John Clayton joining us at 4 o'clock to talk some NFL. Luke Arkins from Prospect Insider does a great job with Mariners coverage. Will join us at 5 o'clock. And Brady Henderson of ESPN.com covers the Seahawks. Will join us at 5:30. Before we get started, Jake has left me with a predicament here, Dave. He's left every one of his social media accounts open. I've got access to his Twitter page, his email, two different emails. What might I do?
I think somebody needs to teach him a lesson.
Does he need to learn a valuable lesson here? Do I need to send out a tweet disparaging Russell Wilson? Do I need to send out a tweet praising somebody else that's a decidedly better quarterback than Russell?
I feel like this is a regular show segment for as often as he leaves this open now.
And that's what he would call hacking, or Jim would call it that. I was hacked.
Yeah, when you just left it open.
When he would leave. Back in the day, Jim Moore used to always leave his Twitter page open on any computer he sat at. And then we used to send tweets from his account, harmless, like, go dogs, boo, just nonsense. But yeah, he'd always say, I got hacked. I got hacked.
Well, let's see. Text it in, 710-710. What should we say? Kelnick going down, Russell Wilson being brought in to play left field for the Mariners.
he's texting us now.
Russell Wilson deemed too short for the NFL.
He says, I'm testing our friendship. He just sent us a text.
Jake's too nice.
He is. If he were anybody else, I would really have my way with his Twitter account. But I'm logging you out as we speak, Jake. I know he's listening, obviously, because he texted, so I'll close his emails.
Yep. Jake might be one of those guys that you don't want to make angry.
Is that right?
Because he's such a nice guy that when it boils over, watch out. He was American Ninja participant. I know that.
That's right. Has that aired yet?
So not yet. It's just everyone is on pins and needles because new episodes air every Monday. So it debuted last week, didn't air. Tonight, maybe. We don't know, though.
What do you think is going to be more embarrassing? Jake on American Ninja or me getting tackled by Dan Marino on the internet?
I'm going to go with Marino.
Thanks, Bob.
Actually, I don't know. Jake seemed to be in a good mood. Now, he wouldn't tell anybody how it went. He's not allowed to. And I'll give him credit. He stuck to it. I thought behind closed doors, he'd be like, actually, this is what happened. He didn't do it. So we don't really know.
Yeah, I've been trying to get information from him, and I get nothing.
But there's a vibe to him. Like, I think he feels satisfied with whatever happened. I just get the vibe that he feels like I represented.
Yeah.
I don't know if he won. I don't know if he made it all the way through the course, but I think he probably did better than maybe people would give him credit for. So I will lean toward the Marino thing. But you did pick off a Hall of Famer, so, that sort of discounts.
Yeah, but it didn't matter. It's how the play ended.
Well, the big news of the day, Jared Kelnick. I was demanding last night in our email. I was like, this has got to stop.
You called it.
He didn't play. I don't think I was going out on a limb with a guy that's batting 0-96, who's 0 for his last 39, and saying, okay, enough is enough. This poor – I was feeling terrible for him. There was no gain. This feels like if anybody's upset about this move, I would really question why. And I don't think there – I actually didn't see anybody on Twitter. Usually you'll get the lone voices out there and – they want to be the contrarian, but this is about as close to a consensus move as you can get, where everybody's looking at it. Maybe some feel bad for him, some don't. Some feel like he's getting what he deserves, as we've seen from some of the texters, and you guys can text in 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. But the idea of sending Jared Kelnick down, I don't think, surprised anybody. And maybe, if anything, you could say, it seems a little late, because you were starting to wonder, at least last night in the email, I'm like, what is coming of this? There's experience. There's things you gain from experience, and I get the benefit of experience at this level. But at this point, it's a really negative experience. He sets a Mariners franchise record going 0 for 39. We're starting to talk about, is he going to break Chris Davis's record of going 0 for 54?
Did you say that was over two seasons?
Yeah.
Period?
That was after he signed his big fat deal. I mean, I don't know what happened to that guy. You could probably some chemistry in there and things like that. I mean, this guy hit over 50 home runs in one season, over 40 in another, and all of a sudden he couldn't bat 200. But it was getting painful. You just started dreading, at least I did, when Kelnick would be up at the plate, because it just didn't, I had no faith anything good was going to happen, and it just wasn't. So it just got to a point where he's not helping the team. He's not helping himself. There's nothing positive he's going to draw upon at this point. Let him go back and work on whatever if it's mechanical, if it's just mental, if it's confidence, whatever it is. Let him go down there and crush AAA pitching, just like Taylor Trammell did. Go down there, take some of the weight off your shoulders, get some confidence, see positive things happen, and then see how he does when he comes back up.
Yeah, I hadn't had a hit in 11 games. And at 12:33 a.m., I received an email that said, "Send him down now," from Bob Stelton. Well, what did you think, though? Because did he come in and play some defense at the end?
Yeah, he did. He didn't hit, but he got called in as a defensive replacement.
So I just thought it was kind of weird that they sat him down. I thought, well, maybe they're going to give him another chance, because still it's at 23 games. And that's if you count the San Diego game where he also came back in. I think he had a nap bat. And then in this game, I guess it would be 24. And Taylor Trammell was 27. When he was sent down, but he was batting 157.
Yeah, he was crushing it, by way of comparison.
Yeah,
he was crushing it.
But yeah, you mentioned the 0-96 for Kelnick. It was just time. I mean, and everybody's different, and so that's with Trammell. You know, it was just a different approach, and I think I'm glad. I mean, let's hurry up and get to it. I always say this. My dad says, got to get hurt worse before it gets better, so it might as well hurry up and get worse. Well, it did. And now he's going to – now here's the thing. If they send him down to AAA, are we going to expect out of him what we got out of Trammell? There's going to be, you know, a comparison, because Trammell went down at one point. He was hitting after the – I think it was a five-game series in Salt Lake City. He was, like, batting over 600.
He crushed immediately.
Right.
That was the story. Is he went down, they have some grace period where they can take a few days before they go down there and start. He went down immediately, played immediately, and started hitting immediately. There was no ramp up for Trammell, and it was awesome to see. I mean, you're rooting for that kid unlike any other, and you're just, you know, so it worked out well for him. He's done well since he's been, I think he's batting around 290, I think I heard yesterday on the broadcast, since he's been back up. Mm-hmm. So it certainly had a benefit to him, a very, very big positive for him. Kelnick, you know, people point to his comments from last year saying, I know I could have helped this team for a fact. I know that for a fact. I think it's been made clear that those comments were a little off the mark at this point. I think he would say that if he were asked about those comments. I don't think you can defend 0-39 batting 0-96. I don't think there's much of a defense other than, hey, you know, I'm going to go down. I'm going to work on my game. I will be back. I know I can play at this level, but I got things to work on, and I'm going to get it done down here, and you'll see me soon. You can still maintain that confidence, but, you know, acknowledge that, yeah, this did not go well. This was painful for a lot of people, including him and the fans and people that were excited about it. So I think it's ultimately it'll be a good thing, but I was starting to wonder, okay, Scott, what are you getting from running him out there? Why would you continue to do that? It didn't make much sense to me. There was just no gain. So it feels like it was a no-brainer move. I don't know if anybody disagrees with the move. If you do, I'd love to know why. 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line if you think it was a mistake to send him down. And Luke Arkins, who's going to join us at 5, as I said, from Prospect Insider, he sent out a tweet over the weekend that said something along the lines of, I still think he's going to be okay this season. And I wrote back, I agree. I think he's going to crush AAA pitching. You know, as a joke, and this is before he was sent down. But he may come back up. Who knows how long he's going to be down? Maybe he's down for 3 weeks, a month. I don't know what their plan is or what they need to see, but maybe he does come back up. And he is, you know, when the story is done at the end of the season, we're looking back going, yeah, that was a rough stretch, but he came back up. It was a pretty productive player. So we'll see how this whole thing works out. It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and I just think, I'm sure people are going to text in their opinion of, you know, whether it's a good move or a bad move, but you just wouldn't know, because it's Scott Servais is having conversations with him daily, I'm sure, and he's talking to the hitting coach, and you know, that's something that you can't know. I mean, everybody is different. Do you think, though, does that stick in the back of your mind that he said, I know without a doubt that I could have helped this team? Because, you know, I'm assuming that if he would have got brought up last year at this time, that it would not have been any different. It may have been worse. I mean, he had the benefit of going through spring training and, you know, 20 games, 25 games down at the AAA level that he didn't have last year when he said that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that it makes you wonder is like, hopefully he's in touch with reality. And you know what I mean? I mean, he's not so arrogant that, you know, he thinks this is a bad move and just give me one more game. And I'm sure it'll all work out. And, you know, I just see Trammell as being maybe a little bit more humble. I like the arrogance, though. I like that he's confident,
yeah.
You know, but it just hopefully he grasps that. And it's going to be very interesting, much more so than, I mean, I think this is the most we're going to pay attention to AAA baseball in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Over the next
absolutely.
You know, 2 weeks. I mean, and, you know, I'm not trying to be negative, but I brought that up today. You know, I'm like, what if he goes down there and he continues to not hit? I mean, what do you do then? Do you send him back to AA?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think we all expect the Trammell effect, right? Because yeah. I think the perception is he's a better prospect than Trammell. He's a higher rated prospect. And that, and we're using Trammell just because it's the most recent situation we've seen with a guy who played really well in spring, had no AAA experience, gets called up sort of out of necessity because Kyle Lewis was hurt, and then is completely overwhelmed by big league pitching, and then gets sent down, crushes at AAA, comes back, and he's been productive since he's been back. So we're sort of holding Kelnick to that standard, saying, well, you're projected to be better than this guy, so you should at least do that. If he doesn't do it, that's a good question. That's because we've talked to Mike Blowers about it, the gap in talent between AAA and in the big leagues.
Massive.
Yeah, right? It's the massive. Pitching. So just to play out your hypothetical, if he went down there and he's hitting, you know, 125 or 150 or something over a significant amount of time, then I'd be concerned. I'm not concerned with what we saw at this level. He's 21 with a handful of at-bats at the AAA level. This means nothing, really. But if he goes down there and really, really scuffles, yeah, then I might think, okay, is there a mechanical issue? Is there something in his approach? What's going on? Because that has not been part of his story on any level leading up to this time in the big leagues.
Yeah. Well, and somebody was texting in something about humility. Luke from the 253 said, do you think it would have been different if he didn't start batting in the leadoff spot? What if Service was trying to teach him a lesson? Maybe, you know, and not like in a bad way, but in like, okay, you're full of confidence. Maybe they thought he didn't have enough humility. So they're like, okay, big shot, we'll bring you up here and put you in the leadoff, you know, and put some pressure on him. I mean, and not in a negative way, just in a way where like this kid needs to go through a process.
Right.
And, you know, for him and his confidence level, we're going to put him in the leadoff spot. So that puts a lot of pressure on him, and it's not like he wants him to fail, because, you know, look, if you are come up and you crush it in the leadoff spot, that's a good thing after you've been doing exactly what we wanted you to do down at AAA, you know. But if you feel like he's maybe needs to be, I mean, there's no teammate that's going to humble him, and everybody has to, and I don't mean, you know, I just mean everybody gets humbled, right?
Right, right.
So you're going to try to maybe accelerate that situation by putting him in the leadoff spot, maybe. And knowing that, hey, look, he's going to get sent down. I mean, look, we've heard it, you know, and especially from Blowers, you know, it's usually a couple of times that you get sent down. So that means that, you know, we can expect Trammell to get sent down here at some point.
It wouldn't be surprising at all.
No. And then, you know, Kelnick coming back up. And him getting sent back down again. I mean, I think we're early on in this process. And, you know, that's just what you have to go to. But maybe it was kind of an accelerated, you know, a way to accelerate the process for Scott Service by putting him in that leadoff spot just because he knew it was going to humble him.
Maybe there was something to that. I don't know if he's going to mess with a kid's mentality or his future by trying to teach him a lesson like that. And the other part of being in the leadoff spot, it only happens once a game. To begin the game, and that's right. It. Then you're in the thick of it. So whether you're now you're going to get more opportunities than if you were batting eighth. But outside of the pressure of just being the guy that starts, I'm the first guy to see this pitcher, and I've got to get this thing started on the right foot. That pressure exists for one at bat. So I think we overplay that a little bit. Just sort of what does that mean? What kind of pressure comes with that? I'm not saying it certainly could add to it. I mean, again, he's the one that you're expecting to get all right, let's get our offense started in the right way. And he's either flying, popping up or striking out or grounding or whatever is happening. So it's, if you're feeling that pressure of, man, I'm putting our team in a, you know, one out hole every game to start the game. But after that first initial at bat, that goes away. So I don't put a ton into that. Do they want to see, is there a part of them that are probably looking at this saying, hey, this isn't going to be the worst thing in the world, this kid getting humbled. Maybe he needed it on some level. You know, I don't think he's a jerk. I don't think he's a bad teammate. I don't think he's a problem for the coaching staff or the manager or anything like that. But I think, you know, going through this, especially since all we've ever heard is he's never gone through it, I think it can build character. It can certainly go a long way in developing and shaping who he's going to be as a big league player.
The 360 just said something that makes me really upset. Is putting Kelnick in the leadoff spot to teach him a lesson in humility is the dumbest thing I've ever heard you say. There's no way that's the dumbest thing I've ever said on this show. That is ridiculous.
Maybe they just haven't heard all the other dumb things you've said.
Could be.
That could be the dumbest thing they've ever heard.
360 is a new listener. Well, I'm not saying he's doing it to undermine Kelnick, but, you know, it's a whole psychological process. You know, you're trying to get the most out of these guys, and it's between your ears.
Yeah.
I mean, look, he has the talent. He's never, ever struggled like this ever before in his life. Maybe playing wiffle ball in the backyard at some point when he was like 4 years old. But, I mean, never. He's always had success, and that's the thing with these top prospects, and that's the biggest problem. You have to go through the process. And I'm sure that there, you know, a guy like that thinks, I'm going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go through, you know, every level. I'm just going to crush it. And so
I'm with you. I like that confidence, though. I like it because it didn't sound like it was getting in the way of anything. It'd be different if he were arrogant and he were a problem in that clubhouse and he didn't listen to his hitting coach. He wasn't listening to Tim Laker and he wasn't listening to service. He was, I know what I'm doing. You know, we talked about Blowers telling Lou Piniella, you know, when Lou said, what can I do for you, son? He said, just let me do my thing. But he was an established veteran at that time, yeah, coming off a successful season.
Right.
And we talked about, whoa, what if Kelnick was like that? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Just it goes in one ear, out the other. I know what I'm doing.
Well, how do we know he wasn't? I mean, you know, look, he wasn't openly.
You're right. We wouldn't. Things like that tend to leak out, though. We tend to hear whispers about, hey, this guy's kind of a problem, kind of a pain. We never heard any of that.
No, and not only that, we get a chance to talk to him. And I thought everything we heard from him was great. And I don't, it didn't, you know, you get an impression when somebody is trying to just feed you a line, you know, like, oh, we're going to go out there and work hard today. And, you know, God willing, sometimes it rains. What was the Lelouch?
You go from Bull Durham.
Yeah. I mean, I thought I liked everything I heard from him. So I'm not saying that. And I'm not saying he was like openly cocky or anything. But maybe there was just some things that Laker and Service saw that were like, okay, he needs to go through this process. And, you know, it's maybe going to be a different path for him. You know, that may have gone into the thinking of putting him as the leadoff spot. But, you know, maybe not. I mean, there's so much we don't know. We don't know this kid. You know, all we know is what we've heard from a couple of sound bites, a chance to talk to him for, what, 8 minutes?
Yeah.
9 minutes? I mean, you know, everybody's different. And so that, yeah, to me, that's something that's between them. We won't figure it out. But, again, I would say this is probably going to happen again.
All right, let's take two.
I'm going to switch over to football here for a second couple of news and notes. Juwan James, the offensive tackle who tore his Achilles working out away from the Broncos team facility and then was cut by them, well, he signed a 2-year deal with the Ravens for $3.5 million, but he also filed a $15 million grievance against the Broncos to try and collect that guaranteed salary that the Broncos then said they didn't have to pay him because it was a non-football related injury.
Boy, that makes the Broncos look like a franchise you wouldn't want to go to as a free agent, right? You talked about that, and maybe legally they're within their rights to say that, and he violated a contract in some way, or they could be completely right in saying, hey, we're not on the hook for this. But it's a bad look. It's a really bad look, I think, for the franchise. And if I'm a free agent and I'm watching this from the outside, or I'm going to be a free agent, and the Broncos are a potential destination, it's a bad sell.
Well, I would think that the Broncos, I agree with you, and I would think that they would need to get out in front of this and, you know, explain to everybody why. Because, you know, look, they don't owe it to, you know, well, maybe they owe it to their fans, but they owe it to their future ability to get any free agents there. I mean, that if that's a team, all of a sudden, the Arizona Cardinals used to have that with Bidwell, that, you know, they were a cheap organization. The Lions.
The Bengals.
Bengals, same thing. So you don't want to get that reputation. Not entirely aware of how it happened, you know, exactly. I don't know that we've been privy to that information. That might be where the answer is, though. I mean, I know John Elway's a pretty good guy, and he does a pretty good job, and he's, like, the most beloved person in Denver history.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe something comes out where the guy fell off of a jet ski, or I don't know, you know, who. But it is a bad look on the surface.
Well, Alabama is keeping Nick Saban around for a while. The 69-year-old got a contract extension through the 2028 season. Saban's already making $8.2 million a year. His deal is set to run out in 2025. When the new one kicks in, it's going to gradually increase to over $10 million a year for the coach.
And that's probably a pittance compared to what that program generates for the school. They win just about every single year. They are always amongst the favor. They are always there. I mean, is he the greatest coach in the history of college football? I mean, if he's not, he's in the conversation. You could have a debate about it, but you get what you pay for with him. Whether you love Saban or hate Saban, he gets the best recruits. He gives you the results that you're paying for. And the amount of revenue generated by that football program, again, this is probably such a bargain.
Yeah, I agree. And I just think he's got a great football mind. You could make a – I know there was a couple of overtime losses that would have extended a streak for Pete Carroll at USC. I think one was against Washington State. Another one was against Cal. But if you go back and start counting his consecutive wins –
Yeah,
I'd say he's up there. But, yeah, Nick Saban is, you know, he's the master. I mean, maybe a little bit closed off, and sometimes, you know, people think he's a little arrogant, but he sure has done a fantastic job at Alabama.
All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife, swedish.org/cyberknifeprostate. Should the Seahawks have tried to match that Julio Jones offer? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we'll speak with John Clayton, talk some NFL, and we will certainly bring this up with him. Julio Jones is no longer out there to be had. He has been snapped up by Mike Lefkoe's Tennessee Titans for a second-round pick this upcoming draft in 22 and a fourth-round pick in 23. And in exchange, they get Julio Jones and a sixth-round pick, and they have to pay all that salary. So I think that was the big part of that whole thing. But we've been reading reports that, hey, there's a first-round pick on the table. They've got an offer on the table of a first-round pick. Now, they didn't say which team it was or what have you, but I'm starting to believe that might not have been true, Dave. If you went for a second and then a fourth in the following year's draft, doesn't feel like a huge price to pay that the bigger part of it was unloading that salary and not eating any of it the way the Texans did with Jadeveon Clowney when he came here.
Well, it's just like, you know, you put your house on the market for $1 million and you're realistically going to get 900 grand. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they're of course going to say that, but yeah, it ended up, and you know, the most punitive part is paying that salary. You know, that's the big part of it. So, you know, and there was the thought here, and I'm sure that the Seahawks did kick the tires on that. You never know. I mean,
well, according to, is it Albert Breer said every team in the NFC West did.
Yeah.
So Rams, 49ers, Cardinals, Seahawks all kicked the tires and had conversations with the Falcons.
And that should never be a surprise, I don't think, for any player that comes on the market. So, you know, and look, they'll think about it. I know that I was listening to Jake and Stacy, and they were talking about the center that ended up signing with San Diego from the Packers.
Oh, Lindsley?
Lindsley, yeah. So, or as some call him, Lindsey. They had decided that, and I think Jake was right, that, you know, that was not where they were going to spend their money. And they end up getting Gabe Jackson, and they've got four-fifths at least in most people's minds, of a really good offensive line. So they're going to be in on everything, but they know what their limits are. And this, you know, I'm sure they inquired, whatever, but it just, you know, there was just no way that they were going to be able to get Julio Jones in here under the cap and everything. And it really wasn't, I mean, I still am like, who's going to run the ball? You know, I mean, and that's the thing too. And Lefko, you brought up the fact that you got Derrick Henry there, who rushed for a couple thousand yards. And, you know, that's going to be, it'll be interesting to see how they fit him in, because they got a really good receiver. I got to say, A.J. Brown, I think I like him better than any receiver in the NFL.
He's a beast.
And it may be even more than DK Metcalf. I don't know. The way he plays, I watched him in a game against the Ravens this year. He broke seven tackles on two different plays, and one was scoring a touchdown. The guy's just an animal.
So I'm having a hard time gauging fans, because I didn't see much. I thought there'd be a lot of disappointment because so many people were excited. We saw so many texts and tweets, and you guys can tweet us, by the way, if you're on Twitter, at Wyman and Bob, at Bob Stelton on Twitter. But people saying, Seahawks need to go after this. Russell needs this. This is a win-now move. It's a win-now situation, and it's a win-now team that you're putting together. You know, Russell's getting older. Bobby's getting older. This, blah, blah, blah. They made the move with Jamal Adams. That means they're going for it now. So, and I don't think that's wrong. I think that's a fair point in the moves they've made and looking at the age of some of their stars. So there was that was sort of the justification as to why you would make a move like that. I wasn't in favor of it because I was thinking, okay, they don't have a first-round pick. So what are they going to do? Are they going to just ship a bunch of picks, you know, that they've already, you know, sort of picked apart because of the Jamal Adams deal? Or then they're going to be on the hook for $15.3 million or whatever he's got coming to him this year guaranteed. I didn't love it, but there was a lot of sentiment for it. Now that this has happened, I thought perhaps, okay, those same people are really going to be mad because it didn't require a first-round pick. In fact, it was a second-round pick next year and a third the following year, or a fourth the following year. So on the surface, you're going, well, Seahawks have those picks. They've got a second next year. They got a fourth the year after that. Why couldn't they have done it?
Yeah, the salary. You know, that's it. I mean, look, I'm always going to take a proven player. It depends on age now. And we get Julio going into his 11th season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and he, you know, he played in, what, nine games last year, 770 yards receiving, you know, not great numbers. But I'll always take a proven player over a draft choice. And, look, I know draft choices make it all the time. You know, Russell Wilson was one, Bobby Wagner was one. But still, if you have, you know, like a Jamal Adams, I mean, you know, you know
what you're getting. You're not hoping you get it.
Right. You give up a couple first-round draft choices for him. So, but, you know, the one thing about the window is closing and that kind of talk, you know, Pete signed on through, what, 2026, something like that, 2025. And then you've got, you know, and he's, you know, the oldest coach in the NFL, but, like, he's the youngest at heart. So, I mean, there's no window closing there. Russell Wilson's going into his 10th year. He's never missed a snap. So there is considerably less wear on his treads here in Seattle. So to me, that is put off just by that fact alone. You put that off like another 5 years because Russ just does not get hurt. He just doesn't. So, I mean, as far as the urgency, I didn't see anything. Plus, they put a lot into, you know, what they are doing in the offseason. You know, they got Gerald Everett. They signed Chris Carson. They've got, you know, Gabe Jackson. I mean, they've done plenty. I didn't think it was going to happen. I knew they were going to look at it. But if they could have got, you know, Atlanta to do a deal like they did with Houston and Clowney, where you're going to pay half the salary. Yeah.
That's different.
Because I think it was $16 million, and I think they got the Titans to pay either 9 or 7. I can't remember.
I think it was 9. I think they paid the majority, the bulk of the salary.
The Texans.
Texans did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that too. So, yeah, they paid $7 million for him. Now, you only got, what, 3 sacks out of it. But he's a good football player.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought at the time that was a really good deal.
People texting in 710-710 to the Mac and Jacks text line. Julio going to be, they spelt it H-O-O, is going to be $15 million on the bench for 7 games a season. He doesn't really have that history. He's dealt with injuries but played. Last year was a bit of an outlier, playing only 9 games. So I'm not going to throw the, you know, he's fragile tag on him. But he may become more fragile. He's 32. You know, I don't know that he's going to get more durable. 253, we don't want an end-of-the-career receiver. Glad we didn't get him. We don't need him. Another one, 503. I'm not disappointed that Julio Jones because I did not think getting him was realistic. I thought Atlanta would find someone to pay his contract. That's from Jen in Beaverton. I'd rather pay Jamal Adams than Julio Jones from the 206. 206, glad they didn't get Julio. His salary is too high and just creates problems down the road, like when it's time to sign DK, which will be after this season. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, not a lot of disappointment here, at least with our listeners right now. And I didn't see a ton on Twitter in the direct aftermath of it. So that's good. That's good. The Seahawks made the right move in the eyes of the fans. That's good stuff. All right, coming up, are the offseason bumps in the road over for the Seahawks team? We're going to talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Some good text coming in, 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. Nobody seems really disappointed other than one person saying that they're waiting for all the, where was it? Just refreshed on me. I'll just paraphrase. They were saying, yeah, everybody's fine with it now until he scores two touchdowns on Akella Witherspoon, and all those cowards will text in and say, I told you so.
Yeah.
He may do it. Who knows? But I'm not that I would love to have him. Is it, you know, if we're playing fantasy football, hey, would you like this player, this player? Yes. Who wouldn't want that talent on your roster? But at that cost, considering their needs, does it address their need? They don't. That's not a need for him. I'm not saying Eskridge is better than Julio Jones, but you've got two of the best. You've got one of the best tandems in all of football in DK and Tyler. You just spent the first pick of your draft on a wide receiver. You still have Freddie Swain there. Would he have been better? Of course. He's developed. He's been in the league for a decade. But I don't think it was a pressing need for this team.
No, I don't think so either. And then also, like, were you going to throw him the ball, like, 50 times? 100 times? Or were we going to run the ball?
Well, and then what does that do to the tight end group that we talked about? Yeah. You signed Gerald Everett in the offseason with the expectation that he was going to be a bigger part of the offense. The tight ends as a group are going to be bigger. Hopefully Disley would have more than, what was it, 24 targets or 29 targets?
29, yeah. And last year, I mean, over the last 3 years, I think since Waldron's been in that offense anyway, their tight end has been the number three receiver, I think, 2 out of 4 years or something like that. So, yeah, I think they plan on targeting him. I think the real news there is that Akella Witherspoon is starting, apparently. You talked about two catches for Julio Jones over Akella Witherspoon.
Yeah,
maybe it's Trey Brown.
That's right. Maybe he catches him over Trey Brown. So we'll have to see. But some of the news that came, I guess this is news. Our very own Jake Heaps tweeted out on Russ's video of Russ on Instagram of a plane landing in Seattle saying, Russ, ready to report to OTAs tomorrow. Any other year, you go, yeah, okay, they're scheduled and all right, great, big deal. But this is a big deal, I guess, because of who didn't show up to the first little go-round.
Yeah. Well, I think here the thing is, this is what bothered me anyway, and maybe we've made too big of a deal out of it. I don't know. I mean, people have texted in on both sides. Like, why aren't they there working mm-hmm. together? And then, you know, it's like, big deal. You know, they're working out down there. Who cares? Why are you guys all over this? But to me, the only reason why I paid any attention to it was because San Francisco had all their guys. They had like all but, I think, seven guys or eight guys. And we're talking about Garoppolo and Kittle and all of their, you know, Fred Warner, you know, and then the thing
Bosa
that,
and, yep.
Yeah, Bosa was there. I mean, I don't know where he's at as far as, you know, rehabbing and everything, but they're there. So, and then the other thing that was mystifying on that front was that I can understand why you wouldn't necessarily hurry to get here if you're Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. Because he's got a pretty sweet setup from what we can tell. It sounds like, you know, and he has different guys down there, you know, receivers. It looks like he, at one point, I'll have to ask Jake about this, but it looked like there was maybe a couple of high school kids that came out, you know, that he probably knew or, you know, some, you know, just having fun with them, you know, obviously you're not getting – he's still throwing the ball, but it's not like they're running professional routes or anything. But
this is like Peyton Manning on SNL where he's just firing fastballs at those little kids.
Knocking them over.
Screaming at them.
Oh, it's like Marshawn Lynch. Remember when he went to the high school practice?
Yeah.
And he was like – he was going like full speed.
Just freight training kids.
Running kids over. Yeah, so – but, you know – but other than him, I mean, he's got that nice workout set up down there, and I guess some of his receivers, but it was just weird to me that why wouldn't you come here to the most beautiful facility, pleasing on the eyes, for sure. I love when we do our shows out there, and, you know, after practice, and you got Turf, the dog out there mm-hmm. running around, biting sprinklers. It's just beautiful, beautiful grass, the lake's right there. But then you got, you know, just first-class facilities. I mean, mm-hmm. probably the best in the NFL, the food. Organic food.
I think we fixate on the food more than anything because it is spectacular.
It is.
People don't understand. I mean, it's like having an on-hand chef, which it is. It's not like. It is. They've got an on-hand chef who is preparing full meals for anybody there, not just the players, the staff, anybody that works in that building.
Right.
You can get breakfast made for you, fresh, hot breakfast, fresh, hot lunch, dinner. I mean, we're not talking burgers and fries.
No. It's good stuff.
It's amazing what they have at their fingertips right there.
Right. Yeah, and they have, you know, like the big salad bar, every kind of drink you need. I mean, it's just...
I would try to move in there. Is there a room not being occupied? Can I just live here?
Yeah. What would you do for them, Bob?
I don't know. Whatever they needed.
Yeah.
Whatever they needed.
You could go out. I would go out and work on the lawn.
I'd be fantastic. Knew you'd do that. I'll just run around behind Turf and pick up his stuff. Whatever they need. Yeah. It's just a great place to be. And I, you know, I've heard you and I've talked about what you had to deal with as a football player, what you had access to, where you thought, oh, we don't need to get a sandwich. We got to leave for lunch break and try to get some food in before our next session and things like that. And I went to the Rams facility in Earth City. So I've seen and heard about different places. This stands out. I don't know how it stands out amongst the other places currently today. Maybe they're all close, they're in line, but I just can't imagine wanting to be, well, I'd like to stay in my own home gym. Like, you've got every piece of equipment you could ever want. You've got the trainers on site. You've got everything you could possibly need and a beautiful view. Yeah. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, and they've got some, yes, I did say organic. Because somebody said that on our show and we can't let it go. But yeah, they've got some really good weight coaches down there too on their staff, you know, and then the training staff, David Strickland, they do such a good job down there. So yeah, you've got everything you need here. That was the other reason why I was like, well, why not here? But now they're here and, you know, we're seeing at least a few names there. And to be honest, like if Dwayne Brown doesn't come, do you care?
No, because he's a guy you're managing physically. Who knows?
Yeah.
Now, again, I do think maybe there's some extra attention needed from him because of the new offense. I don't know how much different his particular role is going to be in this or how much he's going to have to adjust or learn, but it's new for everybody. So yeah. That would be my only hesitation. But in terms of, oh, is he going to be a bad left tackle now or is he going to be out of shape? No, this guy's a proven commodity year in, year out, and physically you're trying to manage him. So mm-hmm. I would love that he were here and learning. He doesn't necessarily have to be on the field and hitting or anything for me to feel good about what he's going to bring to the season.
Yeah, and you know, just to bring up the new offense and just kind of wanted to explain, there's, you know, I think it's going to be a lot easier for Russ to find, you know, checkdowns and things like that. But, you know, from watching Whitworth over the years, there's a couple of times where he has some plays off too, you know, that I think will be really benefit Dwayne Brown because they, you know, they do this – fly sweep action. So like he's on the backside of a play carrying out a fake. And so I've seen Whitworth so many times where he comes out of his stance, gives the guy a shot, and he's done. The ball is already gone to the other side. And I feel like that's gonna help him a little bit too. Just to throw that in about the new offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron. But yeah, I mean, he doesn't really need to be here. He's like Walter Jones.
Yep.
I mean, remember in the Green Bay playoff game when he went out there and miraculously recovered? I mean, he hadn't run for like 2 weeks until he ran on the field that night to play that game. So he doesn't need practice.
All right. It was a pretty impressive end of the weekend for the Mariners. We're going to get into that series coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.